Well, I'm going to start us off today, just give you a context for where we're coming from and how we got to where we are today. So we have always had a passion for planting churches. We've always wanted to do it since we got married, really, since a couple years afterward. We were going to originally go to the Northeast. We were in communication with Harding, someone from Harding, who was telling us we needed to go to the Northeast and plant churches. So we even had a group of friends together. We were going to go up there, and it just, for various reasons, did not work out. So instead of the Northeast United States, we ended up being in Northeast Arkansas, the very Northeast corner of Arkansas. Yes, yeah, very different. So we were there in ministry for about 4 years at Northside. Previously, we had been at another congregation for 4 years in Northeast Arkansas. So, and we never did lose that dream and that passion for planting. And so we just really wanted to do it. And so we got into communication with a mentor of ours who had actually helped our family through our addiction recovery. And he told us, go for it. Do it. If this is what you want to do, we were like, are we crazy for wanting to do this, you know? And so he said, do it. And so it just seemed like the ball started rolling. God was working in that. And before we knew it, we were in communication with Scott and Kairos. We asked several people, who do we need to get in touch with to do this? And he was at HST at the time, Harding Graduate School. And they said, Kairos. You need to talk to Kairos. And so that's what we did. And we went to Discovery Lab. We were able to do that in November of 2013, right?
Maybe.
That's when it was. Yeah, I can't remember. A lot has happened since then. But yeah, it's a rigorous interview process you have to go through for 4 days. yeah. And so that was a good experience, I will say. Overall, it was good. More affirmation. So they told us, you know, we think you can do this, but you need to get some more experience in a larger church setting, because we had just been, as Stan said, at smaller churches. And so we thought, we want to go. We don't want to do that. You know, we don't want to wait any longer. But in their wisdom, they told us to do that, and now we've, in retrospect, we can see that that was definitely the right thing to do. But we've been at Southwest now since March of last year, interning, doing church plant things there, and we have loved it. It's been a great experience, and I hope it's, they could say the same about us. But we have done several things that we'd like to talk about. And it's kind of interesting because Southwest Congregation is also a huge supporter of Kairos for the last 10 years. So that was a really unique experience, for us to be able to do that. And so we're at Southwest Congregation, and now we're going to end up in the Southwest United States, Lord willing, next month. So we are planning to go to Phoenix, Arizona, Mesa, Tempe area. So that's where we are right now.
Yeah. Well, we kind of want this to just be a conversation about our experience. So if you want to jump in, feel free to do that. We're going to try and maybe have some time for questions at the end. But we just want to talk to you about our experience at Southwest and why we think that's so important. Our title, I think, was Church Planting Principles in the Established Church. So we thought, well, we could just put a big bullet list of here's all these principles work well in established church and church plant. That's boring to me. So we really wanted to tell you more of our story and our story with Southwest and how that's come to life for us. And I think hopefully that this will spur some ideas for you if you are in an established church right now, ways that you can engage church planting. So it's kind of been a long transition for us because we've been dreaming about church planting for a while. And we were living in Blytheville, going to church in Jonesboro for about 6 months there. So it's about an hour drive for us, for those of you that don't know the Northeast Arkansas geography. And it was just wearing us out there for a while, just the drive. And so Psalm 90 kind of became a psalm for my heart. Because Psalm 90 is attributed to Moses. It's at least spoken of, from his viewpoint. You kind of picture him standing up on this mountain as Moses knows a little bit about transition. And so here we are driving, you know, an hour each way and just sleeping in a different house almost every night, it seemed like. And finally one night my three-year-old daughter says, "Daddy, where are we going?" I said, "Well, we're going home." She says, "Well, where is my home?" And I felt like the worst father in the world at this point. But this transition has been part of our story. And so that's kind of my story. I've, as a preacher's son, moved around quite a bit around the United States. And so home was never really one place. Some of you may have a strong geographical tie to a place. And so Psalm 90 kind of came into play for me because Moses was kind of the same way. The palace really wasn't his home. He tried to make his home. It didn't work. The wilderness really wasn't his home. He tried to make it his home. It didn't work. The promised land was going to be his home, finally. He doesn't even get to go, you know? And so the first verse of Psalm 90 says, "God, you have been our dwelling place from all generations." And so for us to be able to, you know, to take my family, one of the songs at our wedding was "Don't Take Me Far From Home." So we're going from Northeast Arkansas to Phoenix, Arizona, because where God is, there's home. Transition is all right because God is there in the midst of it. But we've been in this long transition for about a year. Well, Southwest Church of Christ has been in a long transition for about 10 years as they have tried to grapple with, we're a church of 1,100, 1,200 people, but we want to reach. We create spaces, we create opportunities, they say, for people to engage life with God. That's kind of their missional statement. The missional statement, one of the mottos of Kairos, is new churches and new places for new people. So I think those go hand in hand. So Southwest created a place for us. We wanted to talk about that experience, what that did for us to have a place to be, and what that did for Southwest.
Okay. So one of the things that we have done is missional communities. Is that what we wanted to talk about right now? Or
we could.
Okay, that's fine. But Southwest, you know, they have embraced planting in some ways, in one way, by embracing us as planters. You know, that's been a wonderful blessing for us. And one of the ways we've done that is through missional communities. And a lot of churches now will do small groups, you know, on Sunday nights or whenever, at least in our part of the world they do. And so what Southwest is doing now is they are, some of those small groups are becoming missional communities. And it's kind of tough in some ways because you're set in that small group mentality, and which is focused on one night a week, basically, compared to a missional community, which is more of a way of life, a rhythm of life. And so we have seen some of the challenges, but also the benefits of that. And it's been valuable to be able to do that before we get on ground. You know, we have a little bit of experience with that. And we can also mutually benefit the church as well through doing that. And he has a definition of missional communities, if y'all are not familiar with that.
Kind of the working definition that we are going to try to implement when we hit the ground in the Phoenix area is that missional communities are social because they're about people, and they're service because they're about community, and they're spiritual because it's all undergirded by Jesus Christ. And that's really what the point of this is. So it's people in community with Jesus, which some people call that church, right? And that's really what we're at. And that's kind of how we try to explain to people, well, what is a missional community really all about? Well, we're about people who are trying to be in community with Jesus, and because we think he has some good things to say about life. And we think that we can draw people into a fellowship community. Communitas may be a word I might start using. Through service and through care. We care about the same things that you care about because we're part of this community too. And so Southwest is they're wrestling with this because at first with Kairos, I think it was, we want to help out there. We want to help out, start new churches on the West Coast and in the far off. But over time, it keeps trickling back to Southwest, 1601 James Street in Jonesboro. It just keeps hitting closer and closer to home, and I think they've seen that with us being there in person. So what us... Emily and I, what our presence there at Southwest has meant is finally put a face to a project. People love people, right? They don't really love projects. You know, they might, that's an honorable, noble cause, but we love people. We invest in people. And so for Southwest to finally see some people, I think that's been great. And so they're in this transition now. Well, how does this work here? How do missional communities operate in Jonesboro, Arkansas, where everyone seems to be a Christian of some kind or other? I know Stan and Gina have moved to the area, and they've been present there at Southwest with us, which has been a blessing. And I think they've noticed that culture of everyone you meet is a Christian, at least at first. And then you kind of dig through that. Well, what does that mean, and how does that affect your life? And that's where it kind of rubber begins to meet the road. So missional communities is one way we've been working with one small group to help transition that. There's other small groups that are trying to make that transition as well. You wanted to talk a little bit about how this has been good for us, though.
Yes. One of the things that we have really benefited from at Southwest is when you're coming out of ministry, you know, an 8-year ministry run of in smaller churches, you're worn out. You're exhausted. And so one of the benefits that we've had personally is having this time of rest. And everything's not depending on us. You know, we're able to just kind of sit back. Not that we're lazy and doing nothing, but we're able to be set free. We're not feeling scrutinized and, you know, under a magnifying glass, so to speak, and kind of just free to explore and do our thing instead of everything depending upon us. And that's been a huge blessing. And looking back, that might be the biggest thing for me personally has been that.
It's been amazing to me that even though we've kept working all through this time, just a different kind of work was refreshing to me. Being able to focus on fundraising and team building and all the things that it's going to take to get a church off the ground, it was so critical for us to have that breath. And just a different kind of tension even was such a need. And again, that missional community idea is, what is the rhythm of life that you really need to live out of? And so it was a different rhythm of life for us that was so important. And so we really, I think if you get nothing else from being in here today, we really would encourage you as leaders in your churches to consider, what would it look like for us to bring in a church planter and just love them for a year or two so that they can have some fresh air to breathe and think about things that are important getting ready to go. Because if you're an established church that's really interested in learning planting, I think the best way to do it, if you want to embrace church planting, embrace a planter, because you will get the learnings and experience that comes with that, and they will get that place to find love and acceptance and all of the experience that goes along with that. What a great thought. So great that I almost just want to stop there because I can't think of what else. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. You
want to
talk about the cars
and
ball?
Yeah, I think, too, one of the things that an established church... This is a reciprocal relationship, right? This isn't just what we receive from it. This is something that the established church can be benefited by. And one of the things that they receive, which doesn't sound like receiving at first, is they receive an opportunity to invest sacrificially. And so we moved to Jonesboro with a house in Blytheville that will not sell. And so we can't afford, as poor church planters, to even rent, really, a cheap place. And so one of the families at Southwest says, you know what? We've got a huge house. Why don't you live in our upstairs? And this was incredibly uncomfortable for the first couple of months. As you just adjust to this, you feel like an imposition. But didn't that invite them into the planting story in a way that, and just such a unique connection that we will not have for life with this family? And they were called to sacrifice and willingly did so. I mean, they would love for us to stay there, I think. And they keep saying, well, do you really, you know, there's people to reach in Arkansas. Why do you have to? So that's always nice to hear. But there are doors that open for the established church, for that host church, and there are ways that you will be benefited and grow from that experience. I think in ways that will surprise you.
Another thing that we've done is the Alpha Course. We implemented that at Southwest, or helped to implement that.
Kicking off again tonight, actually.
Yes, yeah. Michael has trained a new group to actually take over and do a second run through, so that's exciting. But, you know, Alpha Course is just a place where people can come in and ask questions about faith and be who they are, not have to worry about being judged or being too churchy, so to speak. we do a meal, and then we do small, watch a video, we do small group, and discuss things. And one of the big supporters, in fact, he was, he just passed away a couple weeks ago, a board member of Kairos, and an elder, a shepherd at Southwest. His name was Bob Raley, and he was there almost every week helping us. In the discussions in the small group, he would talk to people at the dinners we would have, you know, having food, watch the videos with us, and it was just so neat to have someone, you know, a shepherd, who was there and who was willing to help us in that capacity. And he knew, he had a personal connection with church planting because he was actually converted as a young man in Syracuse through a church plant up there. So it was just a really neat connection to have, and a great bond, you know, that we shared with him. So,
so as our time at Southwest has gone on, we feel like beyond just, you know, taking a breath of fresh air and kind of relaxing, we've also just been positioned to utilize the skills and the talents that God has placed in us. Southwest is a church, like I said, they may have 1,200 people on a weekend. So I've been welcomed to sit in on, you know, the elders' meetings and the planning meetings, hiring the new youth minister, and I've got to see this church structure and what that takes to help operate at that level, swim in deeper water, so to speak. Because my background had really been in smaller churches of 150 or less in smaller schools, and so that was really where that advice from Kairos came out of. We see potential in you, but you really need to be mentored and kind of brought along. And so just the ability to be in that environment for us, I think it's helped me to dream a little bit bigger. It's helped me to cast a vision for greater things that God can do, because I don't know about you, but sometimes in smaller churches, you get into that mentality of we've done everything we could do and they just still won't come. You know, we were doing everything right, we just don't know how we could do anything better. And then you get to this large, dynamic church of 1,200 people, and they're saying, you know what, we've got some stuff we can work on. And that's just such a shift in mentality, and even to appreciate that they're not satisfied. They're not just willing to kind of welcome people in and shut the doors on Sunday and send them out until next week. There's a hunger there that I think has really fed the hunger that we have, which is we want to reach lost people for Jesus, which is what this is really all about. So we've been able to participate in things like, you know, this last Easter, they really tried to blow the top off, didn't they, Stan? I mean, they and Stan, you were a big part of that. You were really pushing them. What are we going to do Easter? Sit back and watch the eyes kind of like, I wonder. Yeah. We are so grateful for the foresight of the leadership at Southwest with Stan working with Jimmy and Chris Harrell, their associate minister, and just the leadership there, because they've got a dream for bigger things in Arkansas and beyond. They've been willing to pour that dream into us and to share and empower with that. But so as a part of this Easter kind of blowout, you might say, I mean, they're revamping different things. Well, they do a food service every week, Monday and Thursday. I think you can come and receive food. There's not a lot of follow-up going on. It's just kind of take the food and leave. So we thought, well, what would it look like to hold a service and especially invite these people to it and try and speak to the context of life that they live out of each week, and, you know, just some real poverty and just difficulty. So we had a special service for them in the afternoon. We served a meal, and we had church. And it was just beautiful hearing the stories of these people that you think, well, they need Jesus. And here they are telling me all about Jesus and what God has done. And I met a man, his last name was Easley, and he's just saying, I know it's because I prayed that I finally got my grandkids back. Mm-hmm. And so there's these stories out there that are just waiting to be tapped into. And one of the things that I've learned is we've tried to share faith and work on what are our methods for really reaching out to the lost, to those that God is seeking. And so you hear all these stories, and it's amazing how people open up to you and share their life. And you're like, I'm a stranger. You're not supposed to tell me this stuff. You know, you're telling me too much almost. And so what I've really found is that there's more people out there who are willing to share than there are who are willing to listen. And so it's really about just sitting down and creating that environment for people to have a discussion about faith. And there's just not enough people willing to listen. And so that's really at the heart of what we want to do, and what we want to encourage churches to do is just remind them there's conversations to be had with real people around us. Some of those happen through our missional communities. You know, we try to do, you know, the up, in, and out rhythm. And so when you do an out, we go to the hospital, and we take snacks, and we find people in waiting rooms, and we say, can we pray with you about what's going on? And, you know, one of the stories, this is, let's see, this was about March, I think, by the time we go to this hospital. It's January, Dad was in here, now it's March, he's back again, it's just been hard. So you're just there in the hospital hallway, and you pray for these people that you've never met before. And it's a very powerful thing, and probably does more for me in a lot of ways than it does for them. But these are just little things you can do to help step out of this, that normal box, maybe, that you're normally walking through of church.
Yeah, one of the things that we've noticed is that it's a lot easier when you're in a small group going into a missional community, that it's a lot easier to do the in than anything else. You know, the in is where you fellowship together. Just, you can play games, you can just talk or watch a movie together, just bonding time, basically. And they're really good at that, but they're not so great at the other two. And so that's what we've been trying to work on, is to get them out doing service projects, or, you know, doing the out or doing the up. The up has actually been probably the most difficult one, I would say, for whatever reason, I don't know. But so one of the things we've done, and this is great because you can involve children a lot more easily, I think, in a missional community than you can just in a regular small group. And so we did what's called, was it the family box? Yeah, it's called the family box. And you bring an object, you know, just a small object that represents something about your spiritual life. So Michael brought a little chair that went into the house, and he said, this represents...
I have no place to sit.
Yeah, for all the times I've moved, but God has been with me, you know, every step of the way. And then I brought a stethoscope because I went through a really hard time medically for a few weeks, and so... I just kind of shared that and how prayer and just other people got me through that. And our little girl, Olivia, was so excited. I mean, she just got so excited because she was bringing this little cross. And she was going to share the story of Jesus on the cross, you know. And it was just adorable, you know, how the kids got involved, too.
And we had a craft. She was going to have everyone nail Jesus to the cross. We had to kind of revamp
this. Yeah, we
But it's creative worship is what it is. You don't want to just reproduce your Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So you find ways to say thank you in creative ways, and find ways to worship in ways other than you might normally. And you draw your family into this. And so we're trying to help model this at Southwest. And they're really, I mean, they want to do it. They just feel like they don't know how. And they're just a little afraid, I guess, of maybe messing up. But that's okay, because that's how you learn.
Yeah.
And so I'm so grateful for those that have come alongside us in that. Say, yeah, we'll try that. We'll try something new. Because we've got friends we care about who don't know Jesus.
So one of the things that I think Stan alluded to this in the introduction is they're in the process of implementing an internship program of revamped, I guess you could say, up to six different interns at the same time at Southwest, is that correct? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so this has kind of, I believe, opened doors. You know, it's given a face to Kairos, us and Stan, you know, the Greenbergs being there, so they can implement a program that's even bigger and maybe a little more structured, because it felt kind of like this was experimental sometimes.
Yeah, we just got to do whatever we wanted.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Have fun, church planters. We don't want to tell you what to do.
Right. So maybe, you know, this helped them learn too how to be more structured and give some parameters that we did not have. So
what would it look? I mean, we've talked a lot about Southwest and our story. I mean, what would it look like if just 2, 3, 5 other churches said, you know what? We would love to have a planter come spend time with us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got nothing else out of this, that's what I would want you to take from it. We could do that. Our church, we could do that. And I know it's like, well, we don't have money for another staff member, but we brought most of our own salary. As a church planter, you got to raise some money, right? So it was good practice for us to get out there and just say, you know, practice our fundraising skills. And so we brought most of our salary to Southwest. They've invested in us. I don't want to take anything away from that. The Cars had the chance to invest in us for the house. And I mean, I just feel like there are creative ways to come and make this happen. And I think that your people will respond. People rise to a challenge, don't they? We get tired of not being challenged after a while. We've talked about how we don't just want to sit in the pew for 30 years. And we're ready to do something that impacts the kingdom of God in a very positive way. And so I would just love, I mean, what would it look like for that to happen for five churches to say, we'll take a planter on for a couple of years?
You're taking some questions, Michael. I know you intended to be a conversation.
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
I just wanted to feed something back to you. So if you don't know the room, I work for Kairos. And so I feel like we're established churches and kind of what we're doing. I feel like sometimes we're in two different worlds. And you guys have kind of, you've been embedded church planters in an established church. So I kind of wonder if you sit in the middle of those worlds at times because you're bringing kind of new energy, new ideas, a new look at lost people. And established churches, you know, care deeply about lost people,
sure,
but they don't know how to get there sometimes. Or it's that Scott talked about it, his previous talk about it, just frozen. And so is there some, and but yet when we come and talk about starting churches, that doesn't always resonate with established churches. So I'm looking for, I feel like there's a translation, a secret code, a something that needs to come out of that.
I have learned the secret the last
that's
year.
Good. That's good. Right. What I'm looking for, that is my question. So what is...
I don't think there's any magic bullet like that. I think it's just going to have to be some small steps of, we can do more than we thought we could do because God is great enough to do it when we step out and believe.
Yeah.
And so that's what we've felt at Southwest. They've been very affirming. We believe in what you're doing. They've given us the freedom to do what we needed to do, and we haven't always done it that well. I think, you know, there's been things where I can look back and say, well, wow, I'm glad I messed up here instead of out in Phoenix. You know, I've had a little wiggle room there to say, well, that just really didn't work at all like I pictured it working. I mean, one of the things we're doing with Alpha, we tried to just totally revamp how we trained people to get ready for this second course.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time around, we had, you know, some professional counselors. I thought, these people know how to run a small group. You know, they can lead a discussion. And that first night, they were scared out of their minds to lead a discussion about spiritual things. And I was thinking, I didn't want to talk down to them and try and be too much, well, this is how you need to do it. So the second time around, we've been very specific on, this is how you're going to walk through this small group. And so there's a lot of learning that's taking place for me there too. And I think then Southwest as a result of that. But I think, you know, back to your question, just taking that next step. What is that next step into the mission of God? Is that bringing in a planter? Is that, you know, what is that for? I mean, for your church knows better than I do what that next step will need to be. I just think it's that, continuing passionately to seek after that and being willing to, once you realize what it is, to go ahead and do it.
What are some practical ways to go from small group to a missional community?
I think it depends on how much your small group knows about what a missional community is in the first place. So I think practically speaking, up front, you do a lot of education just to make sure everyone understands the basics of what are we really after. I think one of the things that our small group didn't quite understand from the get-go was to be a missional community, you have to have a mission. and that's very specific. And so we were ready to help anybody and everybody, but it wasn't, you know, so we're still defining who are our people that God is calling us to. So I think the first step from small group to missional community is, who's God calling you to serve? Who's God calling you to interact with?
And our group is very diverse as far as geographically, so it's not like we could focus on necessarily one neighborhood or one part of the city. So we're a group of young families with children. So that's probably going to turn into more of our focus group, like a demographic, maybe, so to speak.
And I think people feel guilty if they feel like, well, maybe I'm shutting something down that God's doing if I'm not ready to have a handout to everyone that comes along. I'm not saying you don't have eyes open to who's in your path that day,
mm-hmm.
but you are very specific about who am I, and in relation to this group, who are we called to reach, who are we called to bring Jesus to. And so that's been one of the hurdles we've had to jump is, our group doesn't seem to know. And part of that's because we're not geographically knit together, and so maybe that's something we might want to address later. But it's I think that's okay to not just have that one neighborhood, although that may be an advantage if you've got several families living together.
And one of the goals of Initial Community is to draw people in who are not believers as well, to serve alongside you and to get to know you through that up in and out rhythm. And so that's one thing we haven't done as well, really. We've kind of stuck, you know, it's kind of gets cliquish in a small group.
And we've had new people come in, but they haven't stuck as well yet.
Right.
You know, they still don't know where they fit in that plan.
Is it like you said you're kind of doing life together? Is it like you start with a group of people from the church, your church? And I'm not sure what up in and out mean. I heard
about.
I mean, I'm assuming up is your
worship.
It's worship. In is more fellowship, maybe just fun. Out is service to the community, something along those lines.
And then in is
recreation or whatever you want to be.
And so is it? How would it look? Like, how would, let's say you have a week in front of you. Is your mission for the week, or is your mission for, like, a year? Or do you have a time of, like, this is who our focus is? Obviously, we're going to be praying for God to bring people into you. Like, what would that look like in a week?
In a week, I think what it looks like is maybe you have, so there's structure to a missional community, and then you try to release people. And so, like I said, it's more about life together, not just, well, we had our meeting, so let's disperse. So you have that time to kind of bring people in and focus on whatever the focus of the rhythm is, up in or out. But you also have time to release them. So maybe you meet on a Sunday afternoon, but then Thursday night, the guys are all going to get together at this certain restaurant. You kind of try to make these habits to where you're interacting with the same people again and again. And very intentionally, you know, so maybe you feel like you're called to this neighborhood and you know the wait staff then at that restaurant, or you know the people who are working in that area. And so you're trying to intentionally have repeated contacts that aren't necessarily meetings, you know, but it's like, hey, we're getting together. If you can make it, that's great. And then as far as the service side of things, you know what the people in your community have a heart for. And you know that God has a heart for your community, and so you try to bring those together. So maybe they're not quite ready to love Jesus, but they do love their community. And so you're ready to say, I know you really want to invest in this. Will you come work with us? Because we found that it's a little easier to reach the people beside us than the ones that we're kind of reaching down to, in a sense, or reaching out to, serving in that way. They seem to be just maybe a little bit farther along in their walk with God, even if they don't know it. So there's some receptivity there. To the, you know, all resources are God's resources. And you're like, I can dig that even if I don't dig Jesus, you know? So they're willing to come alongside you for that. Any other questions? Or is that helpful at all?
Yeah.
And then as far as beyond a week, I think as you find your mission, maybe you start doing repeated events, things that you thought worked well. But you do need it. Two or three people who are going to kind of take charge and say, let's lay out some structure to this based upon feedback from the group. Otherwise, everyone in the group says, I think we should do this, and it begins to be very scattery. Any other questions?
Well, after being in such a great church like Southwest, and
great church.
Underlined.
Excellent.
Great church. Yeah, I mean, it's been our flagship church, really, in Cairo. What are your feelings right now about Phoenix, balance between fear and excitement? Because it's a scary... Michael and I went to Phoenix together a couple months ago. It was scary because I had to see the Giants play. He's a Giants fan. Other than that,
I'm really more afraid that I'm going to have to become a Diamondbacks fan. That's my biggest fear.
Absolutely. Tempe is a crazy city. What a fun city. Oh, my goodness. What are your kind of balance between
I must not be smart enough, or it must not be real enough yet for me to be afraid, because I'm not afraid yet. I'm very excited. You know, we've done our groundwork survey trips, and we're building a team. We're building, you know, doing our fundraising. So maybe when I get there and I haven't converted 1,000 people in the first week, then I'll start to fear. It's nice to be at Southwest. Great, great church. Maybe one of the best churches. It's the best church I've ever been a part of. In a lot of ways, there's different churches. It's hard to compare. It's a great church, but I'm ready to be gone from there. That's not where I need to be for a long period of time. There's something beyond that, and so that's why I'm not afraid, I think, to leave, because there's great stuff happening there, but it's going to be great stuff.
I think I'm a little more scared than he is.
I'm a little nervous about it, but
I'll be okay.
Thanks.
Okay. We're excited for you guys.
Thank you.
If you wanted to get an intern church planner, how would you go about doing that?
Now that is a question I've been waiting for somebody to ask. My good friend Stan Granberg right here, Scott Lambert, they're always talking to people and recruiting potential planters. I think they would be the ones to talk to. So we've got information that I think, have you passed that information for contact already?
Yes.
So he's got contact with him. Talk to them and we'll get you hooked up.
Great. Thank you guys.